Hi, everybody. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, and this is Beltline to Broadway, where we talk about the theater from inside the Beltline in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I am, to the bright lights of Broadway and beyond. I need to ask you all to do me a favor and click on that subscribe button so you don't miss any of my candid conversations and interviews with Broadway insiders and theater makers across the globe. In 1947, the editor of the Wyandotte High School newspaper in Kansas City, Kansas, dreamed of becoming a newsman. Instead, Ed Asner pursued a career in acting and went on to play the role of one of the most iconic newsmen in television history, Lou Grant. Asner earned 5 Emmy Awards for playing the role of Lou Grant, first on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and then in the title role of the spinoff series. He earned 2 more Emmys for his work in Roots and Rich Man, Poor Man, making him the most honored male performer in the history of the Primetime Emmy Awards. Some of our younger listeners might know Asner best as voicing the role of Carl in the Pixar animated movie Up or playing Santa Claus in the movie Elf. But for me, as a young girl in Miami, pounding out stories for her high school newspaper with aspirations of working in a newsroom just like Mary Richards at WJM, Asner will always be Lou Grant. Here's our conversation.
I was an editor at my high school paper, and my teacher, who I adored, walked by my desk one day, and he looked down at me, and he said, are you thinking of journalism as a career? I said, yeah. Because, of course, we had University of Missouri, which is quite accomplished as a teaching factory, and the University of Kansas, which also is no slouch in terms of journalism. So I said, yeah. And he says, I wouldn't. I said, why not? He said, you can't make a living. This is 1947. My journalism teacher telling me it'd be hard to make a living in 1947. And think of what it's like now. And so his harsh, cold words drove me to become an actor. An overnight success as an actor.
But I have a feeling it wasn't that overnight.
I don't think so.
How did you start acting? Because it looks like you started acting in college, or was it earlier?
No, I was always a ham bone. I did radio, studied radio in high school. We would do a radio program once a week. We often write our scripts or produce them, act in them, direct them. I didn't do most of that. But I did act, and I loved it. I loved radio. Then I went to college. I had a roommate from New Jersey who was an avid theater aficionado. And they decided to, we lived in the Burton Judson dormitory system. One guy there said it would be appropriate to start a closed circuit radio station there. So the first project they were going to do was going to be a production of Richard II. And I read for the piece, and I ended up doing the Duke of York, I think. And that's how I got started.
You joined Playwrights Theater Company in Chicago, which we now know as the Second City. Is that where you honed your knack for comedy? Or
I guess I never thought of honing myself. I think one gets placed into the hot tub and one has to either build up the resistance to the heat or he has to get out. So I guess I built up my resistance to heat.
I told you before we went on air that I was so inspired by the character of Mary Richards in the Mary Tyler Moore Show. So talk to me about auditioning for that show.
I read for them, my two producers, and Jim Brooks said, oh, that was a very intelligent reading. He said, when we have you back to read with Mary, well, that was a good sign. Pull all the stops out. What? I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I started to walk out, and I turned and said, look, why don't you have me try it that way now? And if I don't do it, don't have me back. I've never talked that way before or since. So they kind of grumbled and said, all right, go ahead. So I read it, as we say in Yiddish, like a mashugner. And they laughed their asses off, and they said, do it just like that when you come back to read with Mary. I thought, well, I just accentuated everything. I was demonic. So I came back and I read with Mary a couple of weeks later, and they laughed again. And I found out a couple of years after that, that after I left the audition, Mary turned to them and said, are you sure? So she knew that there was a phony there, but I got the role.
And what a role it was, and what a show it was. What was it, do you think, about that show and the character of Lou Grant and Mary Richards that was so iconic? It's part of television history.
Well, I just think that we had great writers, and we were fortunate enough that they knew how to cast, fill the role sufficiently to handle their golden dialogue.
I heard in an interview you said that you felt the character of Lou Grant helped perpetuate decency. You lived with the character of Lou Grant for so long. What would Lou say about the current attack on the news media, do you think?
In my own way, I've had my own concern about prejudicial reporting, primarily on the theater scene in New York, and how I was treated whenever I did a job. But as far as current events and the news, I feel that they're fascists crying out about managed news, managed whatever they call it, I don't know. But whatever Trump called it. But on a big scale and involving world-shaking events. And they're lies. They're primarily lies. So how can I enlarge on that?
And you've been so outspoken in your political views throughout your entire career. Some speculate that might be why the show Lou Grant, the spinoff of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, was canceled. Do you think the entertainment industry gives actors more agency now to voice their political views?
Well, since we have such a hue and cry about Bernie Sanders and his socialism, and the American people, I feel, are grossly misinformed about what socialism is and who has it, who doesn't. And having my popularity reduced by the frequent calls at the time of Lou Grant that I was communist inspired, it doesn't take much to wield a village. The rumors are hot, and they sell like hotcakes.
Like a modern-day blacklist, it sounds like.
Yeah. And I experienced it in a milder form than what my predecessors of 5 and 10 years earlier had undergone.
Is the industry better now? Because you've been on a lot of newer series? You were just on Blue Bloods, Good Wife. Is it better now?
I guess so. I don't really know. I think my mini Blacklist did not last that long, a few years, because there were still people out there who wanted to use me, who wanted to employ my talent. And if they don't make it a complete Blacklist, then it's going to fail, especially if you're talented.
Agreed. Absolutely. You know, you were talking about your audition for the Mary Tyler Moore Show and how you read it, the way they wanted you to read it in that initial audition. And I know, or I had seen an interview with you about Roots, that they had offered you a character that you didn't want to play because you thought it would be too easy. I feel like your entire career is really defined by you using that instinct and using that gut. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Just to be simple, yes.
Where does that instinct come from? Tell me about that.
I have good taste. A good example of what you're talking about is before I was blacklisted or whatever happened to me, I was presented with two scripts. One, Christmas for a Rich Family, and two, Christmas for a Poor Family. I decided to take the Rich Family, and that went down as The Gathering, where a rich man, me, realizes he's got cancer, and he brings his family together. He's separated from his wife, and he brings his family together for our last Christmas. And it became sort of a cult film. The Poor Family Christmas didn't get off the ground, really. So I was correct in choosing the one I did.
Do you have a favorite role in this long career of yours, or is there a favorite part that you've played?
Well, I love doing Rich Man, Poor Man. That's where I finally felt I was offered someone that I looked up to, that I respected, such as Axel Jordache. Most of the time, I'm just filling a slot. I'm the boss man. I'm the hard-boiled boss man, and that's about it.
Do you feel maybe because so many people my age anyway know you as Lou Grant, that became a stereotype for you? Was it hard to break out of that kind of stereotype role?
No, it has not been hard. I was with a very bright agent initially, and both of us dedicated ourselves to, when offered roles, to always, granted, we would not take an inferior role if there were a better one, but at least to a role that would serve as contrast to what I had done previous. And it worked.
I would say it did work, yes. Let's talk about the play, A Man and His Prostate. You call this show a story of life, love, and death. I don't think there's a person alive who hasn't been touched by cancer in one way or another. So is the hope with this play not only to entertain, but to kind of get the message out about screening?
Yeah.
And how did the play come about? How did you become involved with this project?
Well, Ed Weinberger, who was a producer, writer for Mary Tyler Moore, he wrote it. It's about his own experience on a cruise trip to Italy with his wife. And he made it funny, and I helped make it funnier.
You've supported so many causes, from the Holocaust to refugees, but one that really touched me in doing my research is the Ed Asner Family Center.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me about how autism has touched your life and what your dream is for this organization?
I separated with my wife from my wife. And during my Playboy times, I impregnated a woman who had a child, a lovely boy, and he was deemed autistic. He has a BS degree from the University of Southern Connecticut, and he's working at the wonderful program that Home Depot has, whereby they work a day or two of the week and receive instruction on how they're dealing with the public. He's doing a good job there. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I had three kids. My son Matthew, on his second marriage, had two boys, and the younger one is autistic, and he eventually married his third wife, who was the mother to two boys who are high on the spectrum with autism. And eventually he and she decided to try opening the center, and they called it the Ed Asner Center. And it's open and it's running, and it's got a good head on its shoulders. And I hope the coronavirus does not kill the fundraising efforts that my son has to go through.
I do too, because I think what the center is trying to do, from what I've read online, is so exciting and important.
It's important.
I read a letter that you wrote on the Ed Asner Family Center website, in which you said your son once asked you what you would be doing if you hadn't become an actor. So I'm kind of curious, what would you have done if you hadn't gone into acting?
Archaeology always appealed to me with its sense of history. I would have probably aimed at something close to that. But at the same time, my father was a junkman. And I love the business. It's a great business. The junkyard would have been a decent place to spend my days as well. There was a time there where I would get up. My son witnessed this, and it always affected him, where I would go out on Saturday nights to buy the L.A. Times so I could peruse the want ads, see what kind of jobs I could get to assist my life support system. If I had been made to suffer for too long, I perhaps would have swallowed my pride and said, "Dad, let me come join you in the junk business." But I never got there. I never got that bad.
And lucky for us, because we have all your incredible characters and roles and books.
Thank you. Well, The pleasure's been all mine, believe me.
Last November, Ed Asner celebrated his 91st birthday. When I asked him what he would most like to be remembered for, professionally and personally, he summed it up in one word, perseverance. Asner was supposed to come to the Triangle last April to perform the one-man show, A Man and His Prostate, at Temple Theater. Unfortunately, the show was canceled due to the pandemic. I had the opportunity to see Asner on stage just once in the production of Born Yesterday with Madeline Kahn. It was such a treat to see him on stage performing, so much so that I still remember that experience fondly. Here's hoping we get past this pandemic so we can see him on stage in our area soon. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast, leave us a review, follow us on social media, and visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.